Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
So, hello, this is Kaho Minamoto,
and I'm Waka Mitsuhashi.
And Kaio Halverson.
Okay, so we're inviting Ashley Sugimoto as a guest speaker. So she grew up in Vancouver, and right now she's based in Japan, working on her filmmaking and podcast making. So thank you so much for coming to our show tonight. So could we briefly hear more about your background?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm Ashley Kiyoko Sugimoto. I am 26 years old, and I'm a fourth generation mixed race Japanese Canadian. Mm-hmm. I am a 2018 graduate from Simon Fraser University's film production program.
Cool.
And yeah, I'm living in Japan right now on the JET program while I finish up shooting my first feature documentary. Mm.
Okay, that's great. Awesome. So the reason why we're hosting this interview is that I actually went to the Vancouver International Women in Film Festival with my friend, Tayo, and we both participated in this festival as volunteer members. And Ashley was one of the panels who were invited to the festival, and that is how I came to know her. And when she said, as you said, like, she graduated from SFU, and my friend, I were like, wow, what a coincidence. And, you know, because my friend and I are exchange student at SFU from Japan. And besides, my friend, like, Tayo was also a film major student at SFU, and also, like, Japanese Canadian as well. So I feel like this is a fate. So here we are. So we finally got together in one place, and I'm so excited to hear interesting episodes from you. Okay, so why did you think about like majoring film at SFU?
That's a good question. The further back in my life that I think about my path, I guess, to getting to where I am right now, the more my current path makes sense. I'd like to think that, or I think maybe a couple of years ago, I would have landed on talking about some of my best friends in high school and influencing my interest in film and film production and storytelling. Mm-hmm. But I think it probably goes back to when I was an infant almost. I feel like there mm-hmm. are lots of things that have built up in my life that have led me to a path in storytelling and filmmaking. I've always been a film fan, always. I didn't get to spend a lot of time with my father growing up, but all of the time that we did have together was always spent watching movies. He'd interrupt my TV programming by forcing me to watch a movie with him. And often it was always a movie that I quite enjoyed. And every Christmas, he would give me a new camera of some kind, whether it's a disposable or I remember my first digital camera. And I was that kid at the family functions that like forced their family to sit and watch a production that I put on just by myself that I had written like that morning.
Wow. Uh-huh.
And then in high school, I was able to take a film production course for 2 years. And the more I did it, it just, everything felt like it clicked. And a mentor that I had in Vancouver, she's no longer around, but she was a filmmaker, and she said, if you're going to apply to any film program out there, it has to be SFU's film program. It's the best one you can get into. And I remember applying to SFU's film program, not really knowing very much about it. I had no idea it was so competitive of an application process. And I remember just thinking, oh my God, like, there's no way I'm going to get into this program. Like, there's no way. But it happened. I didn't even get waitlisted. I got into the program and just was meant to be. And so I got to do my 4 years at SFU and just was able to dip my toes into lots of different avenues of filmmaking and developing my interest and passion for all the things that I've had since I was a child. So.
Mm-hmm. That is so interesting. So like everything that you experienced through your childhood, like all influenced your path, like, you know, that you have chosen, like, so far. And it was interesting to hear the your father and also like your family story. Like, it's really lovely to like hear that you guys were having so much of fun, like watching movie together, you know.
I mean, my poor family had to sit through family gathering after family gathering and watch my probably very poorly written play with a single actor playing all of the parts at the same time. But good memories now.
It's just adorable. Okay. So what are the most memorable works that you have produced, including the very first production?
All the way back then. So the first like film that I actually put together was in high school, and it was we were supposed to do like a chase scene, and it was awful. It was horrible. But I'll never forget making it, because you think about your first idea of a chase scene, you think about like a face-off, you think about the action of chasing, of running, of all these different angles and these places, and especially you think about the music, right? Like, what music are you going to use for all of that? And we were limited to filming within our high school. And so I filmed with two of my other friends, and we filmed the same movie, but then we had to edit it differently. So we had three different versions of the same film. Right. And it was just a chase scene. And this film turned out to be like 10 minutes long for just like a chase scene. So for mistake number one right there, real, really bad. we wasted no footage, and I think my cut had like five different songs in it for just the same chase sequence. But that was great. That was my first experience working with Final Cut Pro, because that's what we used back in the day. My first introduction to film equipment that I still use today, actually, and definitely taught me what not to do in a lot of situations before I even got to university. And so that was great. And then in SFU, I got to make, usually it's like one film every year. I think in third year, you get to make two films depending on your partnership with someone that you're assigned that year. In second year, I made Aiko, which was a 10-minute documentary short. And I'm probably... Yes, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was my first film, like, that was mine. That I made, and I'm probably the most, like, to this day, the most proud of that film. It's it started like a collaboration with two other people in the program, where we were talking about our family histories. All of us are descendants of immigrants, and so we all had a story to tell. And when we went around the table telling our stories, they hooked on to my family's story, where we were talking about the effects of the Japanese Canadian history in Vancouver, and what my family has personally lived through. And They thought it was especially interesting how little I actually knew about my family's participation during that time, or participation. Anyway, choice of words. But yeah, so we explored that, but I hit like a snag with that movie because no one in my family up until that point had ever had like the gall, the gumption to question my Oba-chan or Oji-chan about their time during the war. When I was growing up, it was always like, never bring up the war with Oba-chan or Oji-chan, never talk about it. They don't want to talk about it. They'll get mad. So I was terrified, but we had already agreed on this film idea. And so I tricked my grandmother into doing an interview with me from the comfort of her retirement home that she was in. And she was like extremely forthcoming about her time during the war, which was like unheard of in our family. So this film turned into not just a film school project, but it also turned into something that ended up being very important for the rest of my family. They actually did that one of our family gatherings. They like screened it for the family because it was all information that none of them had ever heard before. And it talked about her time during the Second World War, where she was interned at Lemon Creek. And I also, for that documentary, we went to one of the old internment sites in BC with some of my friends. So getting to kind of get the whole scope of a production where we had scenes with a professional dancer, we had scenes where we had to drive into the interior of BC. I had to fly to Toronto a couple times to get a bunch of footage with my grandmother. That's where she was based in Toronto. And so it was great. And then once that film was finished, I thought that was kind of the end. And like 2 years after we had finished it, we actually got an email from Short Shorts Japan in partnership with Yahoo Japan. And they wanted to pay us to screen that documentary on their website for 1 year. A 1 year contract, which was exciting on its own, but then we got an email in 2019, they wanted to screen it for one more year. So that was like, I like became a paid artist like that year based on a movie that I shot in second year film school of all things. So yeah, to this day, that is the work that I'm the most proud of.
So like you put a lot of effort into like making that like movie, like tracking down your family roots and like the history. And I'm kind of interested in the what your grandmother told you. Like I'm not asking you to like tell something like spoiler stuff, like, but what are the main messages like that you intended to convey through the Aiko? Like
So Aiko was symbolic personally in that it represented the start of actually getting answers from our elders, which in the Japanese Canadian community is very, very rare, both for the reasons that our elders are very unwilling to speak on their past, and also because now, especially now, most of our elders are all gone without having shared their own stories. And so that was a big moment for my family where everyone's interest actually like asking questions about where we come from began. And then, of course, I guess putting it out there, I didn't even know when I produced that film that it was going to have that effect on anyone, on my family, on people who watched it. We had another mixed race Japanese Canadian in the film program at the time who was a year ahead of me. And her name was Natalie Mural. And she came up to me after that, and she and I had never really spoken beforehand. And she said, like, thank you for making this movie. And I just, I didn't even really think either beforehand that it was going to touch on other people who were like me, because that was also my introduction to just the long journey and all of the hidden stories in our community and just how rare that experience truly was. And so even now, like, I guess the main hope is that people can see that and have the courage to trick their grandparents into talking to them about their history. or to going out of your way to ask the questions while you can, because you never know. Like, you never know what they're willing to or not. Because I was always told, like, don't talk to her about the war. And then I did. And she was like, okay, well, first during the war, I was like, damn, like, where did this woman come from? Like, not at all what I was expecting. And that just came from just trying. And so, yeah, I hope that anyone who gets a chance to watch it both learns about some of the history of Japanese Canadians in Vancouver and also gains a little bit of support, a little bit of a pat on the back to just go for it.
Wow, that was like heart touching, you know, like it's really, I feel like the films are like have a huge impact on people who watch it. Like, even if you are not expecting it, it's actually helps like other to have like more passion about something or have confidence in your like their identities, you know. So it was kind of interesting to hear that episode. Okay, so so it's like I heard like that you are making some like mixed race people, like the films featured on like mixed race people, or like you have the you are Japanese Canadians and as a Japanese Canadians you're also making podcasts on that topic, right? So So I'd like to ask you, like, when did you like decide to focus on hybridity of identity in making films, like, or like making podcasts, and also like the experience as a half? Like, I'm kind of interested in that because I'm like 100% Japanese, and I don't know like what it would be like to, you know, have that kind of identity. So could you tell us that?
To be honest, I think most of my life I grew up just perceiving myself as a white person, and that was like, I grew up with my Caucasian mother, and my Japanese father lived in Vancouver, and I lived far away from him, and so I didn't have any introduction really to the Japanese culture, both because I was living with my mother and also there was no effort from my Japanese family to kind of build up any knowledge or recognition that I'm a Japanese person, which now of course makes lots of sense based on a lot of the research that I've done, my current understanding of the situation within the Japanese Canadian community especially. But yeah, Aiko was probably my first introduction where I understood my problems were not just mine. And that kind of got the ball rolling. And then when I graduated from SFU, I needed a break from filmmaking. I had been working full-time and studying full-time during my four-year degree, and that was just back-breaking. So I took like a long break from just anything. And in 2019, I remember, I don't know where the thought came from, but for some reason in 2019, I was thinking, it's time to get back into filmmaking. It's time to get back to creating. And something that was at the very forefront of my mind and just ever building steadily was my identity and my mixed race identity and how many questions I still had to reference with that. And so I decided that I was going to go to Japan and that I was going to make this documentary about like the process of finding your roots, because there are also a lot of questions that not even my Oba-san could have given me. My Oji-chan passed away in 2018, and with him, we lost all of the information that we could have gotten about our relatives in Japan. And so in 2019, I was like, you know, I want to make sure that this story is complete and that we have all of the answers. But also, if anyone out there has ever tried to trace down their family records via the Canadian government's website, you know how difficult that is. It's, I was interested in finding ship records, and, I wanted records, like immigration records. And like, I wanted to know what ship my family came in on. And I wanted the documents from, my family's time during internment. And I wanted, proof and documentation of what, items had been sold off while they were relocated during the Second World War. And there are those records on the Canadian government's website, but they are not categorized by name. They're just a number, and there's thousands of them. There's tens of thousands of documents scanned onto the government's website. And how are you supposed to search like that?
Yeah.
You'd have to go manually one by one to look for it.
Sounds like a lot of work are needed.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
So anyway, I wanted to make a documentary about what it would be like to start from scratch and work your way backwards in time to find your family. And at the time, I had no idea that I was going to eventually come in contact with my relatives here. I really just wanted to film myself in Japan and like getting that contact, and a lot of things have developed along the way with making this documentary. And on the subject of being mixed race, a lot has developed with that as well. Like you mentioned that I have a podcast. We're currently on pause with that, but it's called The Halfuit. And I started that with a friend that I made in 2019 as well, when I started working on this documentary. And she was the first mixed race Japanese Canadian that I had met ever somehow. like the mixed race community really has like very few outlets to find each other, because it's such, the mixed race community is underspoken. Like, we don't know how to find each other. Like, you can't just like go out in public and point at someone and be like, you're a mixed race Japanese Canadian, be my friend. And for me, like, I had no idea about any like events or communities or anything like that. And so I met Sakura, who was my co-host on the podcast, and she really got all of my gears turning, where we were exchanging stories with each other about our obachans and about our experience where we call rice crackers sembe, because that's what they're called, but obviously in English it's just rice crackers. But I never did that. I grew up calling them sembe. I grew up getting Botan rice candies, and she was like, oh my god, I did that too. And I'd never ever met anyone who had those experiences, and it made me emotional. And I was like, I finally felt like I was connecting with someone in a way that I didn't realize I was lacking before then. And my friendship with her led to a lot more like reaching out to the communities and actually being able to find people who are also just like us. And what we learned from that was how much there's still a disconnect amongst the mixed race community, period, let alone the Japanese Canadian mixed race community. And so we started a podcast where we could talk about things that hopefully people like us would also would also connect with. And it, a lot of it is not very serious at all. We're talking about, like, each episode had a subject related to Japanese culture, and we would talk about it in relation to our experiences growing up and some history on those topics, and mostly just having a good laugh. But with that process also, that has led me to a lot of extra friends in the mixed race Japanese mm-hmm. community internationally. Like, there are people in Japan who listen to the podcast. There are people in America, in Spain, who listen to the podcast. And that was overwhelming. I think that that was even more of like an eye opener to how widespread this general confusion and imposter syndrome that exists amongst mixed race people just is. Like, all we were doing was talking about how we have always struggled to feel like we belonged. Mm-hmm. And we had thousands of people reach out to us and wanting to talk about it and telling us like their own experiences. And that was overwhelming. Like, how can there be so many people out there who have mixed heritage who just feel so lost? Like, how can we communicate with each other? How can we find each other? And we were really excited that this podcast was serving as kind of a reaching a handout for anyone who wanted to take it to talk about and to experience some stories about being mm-hmm. mixed race.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right. So, like, I think the encounter of you two guys, like, are kind of very, you know, memorable thing for you, I think. And friends call friend another friend, right? So if you guys are talking about the things within the community, like, maybe more and more people are attracted to what you guys are talking about and what you guys are passionate about, like, want to know about. And then that attraction, like, kind of creates bigger community, and that's how your podcast works. And it's a really good thing to have that community. Because, like, as you said, it's kind of difficult to find the people who has the same kind of identity. So it's really interesting. Okay, so Waka, do you have?
Okay, yeah, probably. This is pretty different from what we've been talking about. But, like, the main point, like, the starting point of our podcast that me and Kaho are actually thinking of working on right now is like, so we know what we want to do. Like, we know that we want to get our foot into the creative side of the world, but then, like, in Japan, I was surprised to hear that you had a film class in high school mm-hmm. because we never get that in Japanese high school, right? Yeah. Like, in Japan, still, I think getting your foot into like creative world, like a film or music, is like a risky decision mm-hmm. and somehow irresponsible for your future. So your parents are... I believe there are some parents who are totally open with their children going into that industry, but my parents, at least, they are quite worried about it. So I also get worried about, oh, maybe I'm not determined enough to get my foot into that side of the world. So, like, I wanted to hear if you also experienced like a feeling of uncertainty before actually starting your journey into film world,
mm-hmm.
like, were you scared at the beginning?
Oh my God, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still scared. I'm still mm-hmm. nervous all the time, every day. I was nervous for this. Like, I think with filmmaking or podcasting or getting into the world of artistic creativity, you're mm-hmm. kind of at a point where you're a small fish in a very, very big pond. And yep. that's intimidating because not only are you a small fish, but there are other small fishes that are just like you, just as talented, if not more talented. And you have no